So we'll move on to our next case, United States v. Geshek. Mr. Dollinger, just the other side who's arguing by speakerphone.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chad Dollinger on behalf of Appellant Doran Geshek.
So is he dialed in?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah. Please support counsel. The sole issue before the court today deals with a sentencing enhancement, and the question is whether Ms. Geshek occupied a position of trust. She did not, and because she did not, the district court's decision to impose the abuse of trust enhancement was erroneous. A person occupies a position of trust when they have substantial discretion, the substantial discretionary judgment, and that judgment is given considerable discretion. The inquiry, as this court said in Cruz, involves looking at the actual amount of access the individual had regarding the items of value. In this case, Ms. Geshek was accused of defrauding the government of about $13,000 of appliances from a fund from HUD. But the facts make clear that she neither had discretion over those funds, deference regarding how those funds were used, or any access at all as to the funds at issue. The way that she would get these funds, the way that she went out to get these appliances, her supervisor, the project manager, asked her to get some bids for appliances for this Bishop Lake project, for these 11 homes. She went to the appliance store. She got a bid for these appliances, also got a second bid for appliances for her own house. She brought these two invoices back. She then went to her supervisor, submitted a request for a check, provided the supporting invoice for the Bishop Lake homes invoice, and he had to review and approve that. Once her supervisor, who is Mr. Jeff Ackley, the project manager, approved that, he would then submit it to the accounting department. This is Mr. Bruce Knapp.
What are you arguing? Are you arguing that their supervision of her was incompetent or what?
Yes, their supervision was incompetent in this case. What the government alleged happened here and what the district court found was that when she submitted the request for the check, she submitted a request for the total amount of both the Bishop Lake appliances and her own appliances, but she only submitted the invoice for the Bishop Lake appliances. So if any one of the three supervisors, her direct supervisor, the accountant, or the tribal chairperson, had used a calculator and looked at this and determined, you know what, the request is for $50-some thousand, invoices support about $13,000 less than that, they would have discovered this. Had they simply exercised their authority and their obligation to review these invoices, make sure that they were accurate, this never would have occurred. So the fact that she committed this fraud, that there was a finding of fraud here, doesn't mean that she was in a position of trust. In the cases that this court has found where there is an abuse of trust, support this decision. For example, the Bradshaw case. That involved a case where the defendant had access to the credit cards and was not required to submit invoices to support the requests. In this case, she always had to submit invoices along with her request for payment. Because she did both of those things, it is an issue of supervision, not of an abuse of trust. And the record is also clear, though the government characterizes her as an assistant project manager, as having substantial authority and discretion, she was merely an assistant. On the grant application, her job was to assist her supervisor, and that's what she did. He asked her to go find some appliance bids. He told her what source of appliances she should look for. She did that, brought them back to Mr. Jeff Ackley, and he approved them. That is not a person in a position of trust. There's no discretion. There's no control or access to the funds at issue.
Did they write the check to her?
They did not. They wrote the check to Appliance Mart. So once the check was written by Mr. Bruce Knapp, the accounting person, it had to be signed by two other people. It had to be signed by the project manager, Mr. Jeff Ackley, and by the tribe, the head of the tribe, Mr. Arlen Ackley. The check was then signed, written to the Appliance Mart.
You're saying they should have compared, they should have added up the invoices and...
Yes, Your Honor.
Before they wrote the check.
Yes, Your Honor. They should have.
Make sure that...
And there were two different times this could have happened. Sure, three different times. It could have happened when Mr. Jeff Ackley first had to approve the expense. It could have happened when Mr. Knapp was supposed to do an independent verification and review that as well before he issued the check. It could have happened a third time when Mr. Jeff Ackley and Mr. Arlen Ackley signed the check. This is not a case where she doctored this invoice for the Appliance Mart to make the numbers add up. Often in cases where this court has found an abuse of trust, they have found that the employee would fudge the books, doctor the books, submit false invoices,
so
the numbers would
match up. Well, she did doctor invoices.
There is an allegation of a doctored invoice which took place after the fact. There is no dispute that the invoice she submitted to get approval was the actual invoice. What the district court found was that after she was convicted, exactly,
yeah.
She came back once she was in a different job, allegedly went to her office and tried to show that he had forged his signature to show he had approved of the expense. That has nothing at all to do with the approval process or her access to the funds.
Well, what the district court did was say there were two ways he could have interpreted it, that they were negligent. They didn't follow through on their job responsibilities, or on the other hand, because they trusted her so much, they just assumed that everything was accurate. That, I think, is what the court relied on.
Yes, and we believe the court was erroneous in doing that, because when there is a substantial set of procedural safeguards in place where she had to submit the underlying invoices, the check request, and it was independently reviewed on three different occasions, that doesn't demonstrate they trusted her. There are cases where a person need not submit the actual
underlying
invoices.
Well, obviously they trusted her. If they distrusted her, they would have added up the invoices, right?
Well, certainly, but that doesn't rise to the level of a position of trust under this court's jurisprudence. There has to be more than simply, I trust you to do your job. If that was sufficient, every time there was a case of fraud involving an employee, there would be the abuse of trust enhancement. This court has said that is not the case. It must be something additional. In this case, it doesn't have any of those additional factors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Dellen.
Thank
so
you.
So we'll hear from Mr. Cantor.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. And let me begin just by thanking the court for this accommodation.
Yeah, it's no problem.
This court's decision from 2012 in Bradshaw instructs district courts that the key issue, the common thread, which is the words used by the Seventh Circuit Court in the decision, is the key issue is the victim's trust and reliance which is placed in the defendant. Issues such as job title or degrees of discretion, things of that nature, the court says, is only indicia of the trust and reliance placed in the defendant. They're only things to be looked at in a highly intensive factual analysis. And in this instance, the district court conducted that highly factual analysis. And what the court found, Your Honors, is that the tribe in this case placed great trust and reliance in Ms. Mageshik. She was named by the tribe in the grant application as an assistant manager for the project. In fact, looking at the documents, it specifically states that she is to spend 50% of her time on this project alone. She was the one entrusted by the testimony during the trial, specifically from Mr. Ackley. She was the one entrusted to arrange for the acquisition of appliances. And she was relied upon to prepare the documents justifying the payment for those particular appliances. Now, with all due respect to counsel, I strongly disagree with the proposition that the documents were not altered. And what I mean by that is, in the sense of altered, she did not fully disclose to her superiors at the time payment was requested what had occurred here. I would argue that that's altering the document. And what I mean by that is, there were two separate sets of invoices. One invoice was for the appliances she purchased for herself from the government funds. The second invoice was for the appliances purchased for the project homes. When she submitted the invoice forward for payment, she only disclosed to her supervisors the invoice for the project homes.
Yeah, we know that, but your opponent's entire argument is that her supervisors were negligent because since the check and the total of the invoices that she submitted were discrepant, if they'd added up the invoices, they would have realized something was amiss.
That might work, Your Honors, with all due respect, if only one invoice was submitted forward for payment. But what she did in this case is she broke the payment into two separate requests. They were separated, if my memory serves me correctly, by approximately 9 months' time. So the first time she submitted the request, she only received partial payment. She took that to the store, paid for the entirety of the appliances she purchased for herself, and a part of the appliances she purchased for the project. Again, if my memory serves me correctly, approximately 9 months later, she submitted a request for payment on the balance of the project appliances. And in that fashion, she managed
You've lost me. She didn't. You said she just submitted invoices for the for what she bought for the houses for the company.
That's correct. But she submitted them twice.
But she wrote a check for a larger. I mean, she was given a check for a larger amount. So if they'd added up the invoices, they would have realized that there was some money was they had given her money for which there was no invoices. No.
So
are you looking at Exhibit 24 that was part of the record? Exhibit 24 dated December 17th, 09. And that shows that for appliance that was about $25,000 and some change. And then in September, 9 months later, it's showing that there were additional purchases. Is that what you, $35,000 furniture and appliances from Appliance Mart. That's what you were referring to. That's Exhibit 26?
Yes, that's
just so
correct.
We're talking about the same two exhibits and we know what you're dealing with.
Yes. She split them up. She submitted the invoice for the project, only the invoice for the project appliances, divided the cost so that it was split up, and they were separated by approximately 9 months.
But I don't understand. Both Exhibit 24 and Exhibit 26, they have a list of purchases, and and it is summed up $40,000 in one case, $193,000 in another. Now, didn't she submit the invoices for all those sales?
She submitted invoice, I'm trying to find the number here. She submitted the invoice 3099-3089. She never submitted to her superiors the invoice 3099-3115, which is Exhibit 7. That was never submitted forward for payment.
Look, you've lost me. You've got a list of invoices, and you've got the check that they made out to her, and they're discrepant, aren't they?
They are by, if I'm doing my math here, by, there's approximately, I think about $10,000 more. Yes, you're correct on that.
So why if they had added up all the invoices, they would have seen they were the missing $13,000 or whatever it was, right?
Had they gone back to December, the prior December, I believe it was, and looked at those invoices, prior December, and looked at the invoices in September when the final invoice was submitted forward, I'm assuming that it could have been found at that time.
And let me ask you this. For each of these items that are listed, for example, on Exhibit 24, did she have the backup documentation for those, like the housing authority, like some reimbursement, debiles, shirt signs? I mean, there are a lot of things that she has listed. Did she submit bills for each of those to accompany the invoice, Exhibit 24?
It is my understanding, I was not trial attorney, but it was my understanding from reviewing the record, that when she submitted a request for payment forward, the issuance of a check forward. She prepared a spreadsheet, which I believe is what you're seeing there, that listing of requested checks, supported by invoices.
Okay,
that
so
is my understanding.
So had they compared the individual bills from each of the vendors that are listed on Exhibit 24, they would have seen the discrepancy when they got to the appliance bill, correct?
I believe that to be correct, yes.
So, and they went similarly for the second bill, that discrepancy would have shown because she wouldn't have the backup documentation. So she submitted the backup documentation and the spreadsheet. So if they were on top of their game, they could have seen the difference, correct?
Again, I believe that would be correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Cantor. So, Mr. Dellinger, does he have any more time? Okay. Well, thank you very much. And were you appointed? Okay. Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Cantor as well.